Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Welcome to the Halftime Report. I am Courtney Reagan, in today for Scott Wapner. Front and center this hour, trading the tech turnaround as Alphabet and Microsoft deliver in a big way. And a few of our investment committee members actually doubling down on their tech trades. So joining me for the hour, we have Josh Brown, Brent Talkington, Jim Labenthal, and Steve Weiss. We've got a big show ahead. We're going to give you a quick check on the market here on this Friday. Things are looking fairly green. Dow Jones Industrials higher by about 0.4%. S&P 500 up by 1%. And the NASDAQ leading the way higher by 2%. We're going to get all into Alphabet and Microsoft in just a second. Obviously, that's a big story of the day. But first, we've got some big trade alerts, actually, in tech land specifically. So we've got Josh, Weiss, and Jim all hitting the buy button today, but in different areas. So, Josh, I want to start with you. You just bought Netflix here, down about 2%. Why'd you buy it? What are you seeing here? Is this a trade? Is this an investment? Tell us what you're seeing.
So right now it's a trade. I've done this before with Netflix. When this stock blew up in, I think, April of 2022, it was, I think, like one of the best buying opportunities for a large cap growth name of the year. And it took a while. It wasn't like a V-shaped recovery. And I don't know that we'll get a V-shape here. But once again, the stock is blowing up because the quote-unquote long-term shareholders here continue to embarrass the brand. I can't believe that we saw a reaction like we did about them reducing the subscriber guidance. Mm-hmm. It's such a childish metric to begin with. It's people that don't own a business think that that's like an important thing, when in reality, the company is telling you, focus on revenue, focus on operating margin. The subscriber thing will be up and down. Those are no longer the KPIs. I think that's what a mature company should be telling the street, and that's what Sarandos and Peters had to say. So I gave it a week. I let it settle out. I wanted to see if the stock would hold its support, and that's exactly where it's trading. I can't see the screen. Patty, give me like a 3-year or even a 1-year chart. Take a look at this gap higher from the January earnings report, which was spectacular, by the way, just as this earnings report was. You see how perfectly the buyers came in right where that gap took place. So I think support should hold. It's not a long-term investment here. I just want to trade the overblown reaction. I do have a stop loss. I may not be in the stock if it continues to sell off. But I think watching the buyers come in where they did, I think the stock's okay here. It's not that they're not going to tell you how many subscribers they have. It's that they're going to tell you about the big milestones, not the noisy quarter-to-quarter data. And anyone that actually runs a business will tell you the number of clients is not a number. It's like it's a vanity metric, but revenue and operating margin, those are the numbers that really matter. And I think people will get over it, and I think the stock should be okay.
Very interesting. Weiss, you own Netflix.
I do.
What do you make of this one?
I bought it earlier than Josh in terms of after it cratered.
Okay.
He laid it out perfectly, very articulately. I think it is longer-term play, though, this time.
Longer than a trade.
Small position going in.
Yeah.
It's still not a big position. But look, you know, why I think it's a longer-term play is because you're seeing the competitors fall by the wayside, right? So they are always the best, always the strongest. Now that moat around them has increased because nobody can match their spending. Nobody else is profitable in streaming, just them. Disney will be a winner in it, but that's it. You've got those two. In terms of what Josh says about subscriber numbers, I'm glad they don't report them anymore. Hmm. When Apple got done reporting their numbers, those similar metrics, it didn't matter to the stock, and it shouldn't matter here. As a matter of fact, if you sold the stock at any point when subscriber numbers disappointed, you made a big mistake. So focus on the business, as Josh says, focus on the longer term, right? There are plenty of KPIs, and one of them being, of course, price,
sure,
right? So subscribers are, you know, they come and they go, there's churn in the business, there'll be less churn again because there aren't that many competitors to go to. So to me, it's a pretty good holding with best in class.
And you just buy your
advertising,
more Netflix.
Advertising,
right?
Too.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to add to Weiss's point. As advertising rises as a percentage of the revenue mix here, the number of subscribers is not relevant to that. Mm. So why wouldn't they tell the street to focus more on overall revenue? If the business was going to be 100% subscribers and the only way it was going to grow was how many people are subscribing each quarter, that would be a different story. That was the state of the company 3 years ago, and now it's not. So of course, the more important metric is going to be overall
total
growth
revenue.
In revenue and how profitable it is.
Right, of course, encompassing more of how they're actually generating those dollars. So you didn't buy more Netflix here. You owned it already, but you did buy some Meta.
I bought more after the quarter.
Oh, you did, more on the quarter.
Yeah.
Okay. And you also bought some Meta, even on that big dip. You're not discouraged by the investment in AI? You like it?
No. Look, it's, again, to Josh's point, if you run a business, right, or as my former caddy, Carl, said, scared money don't make money. So you've got to invest to generate return, right? You have, and we'll talk about it later, Google, Microsoft, and Meta have the wherewithal to invest large sums of money to be leaders in the space and extend their lead. They're already leaders. So why wouldn't you? So to me, it's asinine to sell the stock because they're investing in their business. Mm-hmm. And the largest shareholder in the business is making the investment, that being Zuckerberg. So to me, I bought it at 416. I just thought that it was way, way overdone selling it. They had a great quarter. The guidance is also pretty good going forward.
Yeah.
So because they're increasing CapEx, you know, for the right reasons, that'll be exponential in terms of earnings gains going forward. Why wouldn't you do it?
It did seem a lot of your sort of trading colleagues felt that the move was overdone for the sell-off because the quarter was strong. You have to invest in AI for the future, you know,
now,
an opportunity.
Now, here's what I will tell you. It's a supersized position.
Okay.
And what I mean by that, it's irresponsibly large at this point.
Okay.
So my core position stays, and this will be, you know, at some point I'll exit. I've already got a gain on it, but I think my gain could be dramatic from here, too.
And Jim, you press the buy button on NVIDIA. We're not going to hear from them for a little while, but nice price action today, up 5%.
Well, yeah, I mean, we got a meaningful pullback over the last few weeks, and it's found its footing. It's going higher. I continue to think that the valuation on this name is actually quite inexpensive. And I know that at mid-30s, some people may look aghast at that, but just remember the earnings growth that you're looking at for the next few quarters is likely to be well above 30%. Folks, that won't last forever, but it is for the next few quarters. So I'm comfortable adding it here. I'm not, Courtney, just for the record, I'm not adding big positions here because I do think this market overall is going to be choppy. I think we're still adjusting to higher interest rates, but I do think from here to year end, we're going to look back at this price target or this price level on NVIDIA and feel it was a very good entry point.
Brent, you're with us and you own NVIDIA. We're sitting at what, 866 right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, and we'll talk about it in a second, but just to kick it off, when I listen to Google, Microsoft, Meta, I mean, Google, 90% CapEx year over year. Microsoft, 50% CapEx growth year over year. Tesla is going to buy 50,000 H100s. Meta the same. What that tells me is they're still all buying NVIDIA. So it's like all roads lead to NVIDIA. Mm-hmm. I think Jim is so spot on and great to add to that position because actually it's over its 50-day. It's been bouncing at it. I think when their numbers come out, just listening to these companies, these trillion-dollar companies, talk about the CapEx spend, they're not CapEx spending their own silicone. They're still going to NVIDIA. And so I think NVIDIA is going to have another blowout quarter, and we probably get the stock back over 1,000 if the market participates with it as well.
So we've talked around it, but let's get right to it. Let's get to the chart of the day. I mean, Alphabet hitting a new all-time high after reporting blowout results, announcing its first ever dividend as well. We've got some ownership here around the desk. Josh, you own it. Weiss, you own it. Jim, you own it. I guess, Josh, let's start with you. What did you like about the quarter? I mean, there was so much really to pick from here.
So there's two things here, Courtney. I want to talk about the optics, and then I want to talk about the actual fundamentals. The optics around Alphabet have been horrendous in recent months. And I'm a long-term shareholder here, and I had thought early this year that Alphabet had the potential to be the best performing of the mega caps. I thought this and Amazon. I still do. But this company has had repeated embarrassments with their generative AI outputs, and it became like a meme on social media. We don't have to rehash all the things that happen. Everyone knows. Now they have these employee protests disrupting key executives' offices. They have sit-outs, they have walkouts, they have tents. They have it almost looks like a college campus in terms of like the way people perceive what's happening inside of the company. So what Ruth Porat needed to establish, and by the way, I think she's one of the best. What she had to establish on this call was the fact that this is actually not a kindergarten for random science experiments, and it's not a social justice exercise. It's a business focused on profitability and making money for shareholders. And that's exactly the way the street took what she laid out. And this is really important. Ruth is moving up to this newly created position of president and chief investment officer, which Alphabet has not had in the 20 years it's been public. They announced that last summer. They're still trying to find the CFO who's going to replace her, but she will be overseeing the other bets segment, which has been a cash drain, let's face it, historically, and the Waymo segment, same as well. But I think when they announced that it put a bottom into the share price, now with them announcing the first ever dividend and taking the buyback up by another $70 billion, that's the clincher. And the timing really helped, because doing this on the heels of Meta giving the impression that the spending was getting out of control again made Alphabet look even better than it otherwise would have. And I don't think it was timed that way, but I do think it helps. That's the optics. On the numbers, it's undeniable. It's a gigantic company still finding 15% year-over-year revenue growth, which is the fastest growth rate since 2022, a massive earnings blowout, and we know that the overall advertising spending environment has improved. You know how you know it improved? Because even Snapchat, which is run backwardly, managed to have an upside quarter. So you have a tailwind from AI, you have a tailwind from ad spend, which is the most important component here, and you have a sense that the company is here to make money for shareholders again. That combination was delicious. That's why the stock's trading the way she is.
Jim, you were talking about this as we were previewing it. You didn't jinx it after all. Look at the numbers. This is a big holding for you. I imagine you're fairly happy here today.
Yeah, it's actually my biggest tech holding, so okay. I'm very happy with it. I think actually it would not be up as much as it is 10%. Maybe it would be up 4% if not for the dividend announcement, which, you know, taking the page from Meta's playbook, just draws in a whole new class of investors that look for dividends. You know, obviously quite a lot to like here, but I go back to about 2 months ago when they had that AI generation, that image generator issue with the Pope and all that sort of stuff. But at the time, the stock sold off. And what I said at the time, and others said it as well, is like, look, go back to February of 2023 when they first rolled out Bard and it had a mishap with something about celestial orbits. I don't even really remember what it was, but it answered a question wrong. And the stock got sold off hard. That was an incredible buying opportunity. The stock rallied 60%. Actually, that's before today. It rallied 60% off of that low. At the time in February that we had this image generator issue, I said the same thing. Others did as well. Like, this is a buying opportunity, and it proved to be that even quicker this time. And the end of the story here is there's a lot of irons in the fire for Google. Obviously, a lot of them revolve around AI, but just the basic search business, just YouTube, Google Web Services. Yes, all of these things are enhanced by AI, but they all have intrinsic business growth and strength, which means there's a lot going right for Google, including a valuation that's very attractive.
Weiss, I was impressed by the YouTube revenue. Jim just kind of mentioned it, up 21%. That was better than expectations. Google Cloud, we spend so much time talking about AI, but I mean, look at what they did in all their segments.
What's remarkable and unprecedented in terms of history, Apple didn't even accomplish it, to have this kind of growth on this size revenue base. Microsoft did, Meta did. Think of how outstanding that is and how difficult it is to grow at that rate when you've got such a large revenue base to begin with. Look, this is a slightly bigger position than Meta for me. I you know, almost doubled down. I had a big position anyway when it was in the 130s, when, you know, people were saying, oh, they're done. Gemini, it's such a disaster. Mm-hmm. There's only one Google, and this is it. And to think that Google wouldn't fix that and won't learn from that mistake going forward. That was a fixable issue. It was not a shot to the heart. It was a fixable issue. So the short-termers and the ones that don't really know what they own, they puked it, creating opportunity. And frankly, that's the advantage for me of not being benchmarked. So I don't have to think, oh, tech has to be this. I'll take a slightly outsized bet and be 1% above, or I can't have a position that's larger than 3%. I'm just there to make money, or in some cases, lose money. But frankly, this is just one that's going to keep going and going.
Well, today you guys are making money here as the stock is up about 10%, sitting above 172. A lot of price target upgrades, too, from Oppenheimer, Morgan Stanley, Barclays, JP Morgan, you name it. But we got to move on to Microsoft because this is also an impressive report. Bryn, this is one of your holdings. What did you make of the quarter?
So, you know, I think Satya Nadella and Amy Hood are like the best combo from a CEO, CFO out there. I thought what he said was so important. He was like, as it relates to AI, he said, we are continuing to see AI democratize expertise across the workforce. I see it in our business every day. Things that took a long time are just so much more efficient. And so I wanted to hear about Copilot, and I was hoping they would talk about it at the beginning. And Satya did not disappoint. It was in like the second sentence of his remark. And he's talking about how Copilot is just driving so much better business outcomes for every role in every industry. And I think this is one of the unique plays of the mega caps, that you have this huge company that is already starting to monetize all down the vertical of what Amazon does, I mean, of what Microsoft does. I think the cloud growth, they hit $35 billion, up 23%. So they're operating on all cylinders. And I think Copilot's just getting started. And then I think 3, 4, 5 years from now, this is just gonna be a whole nother revenue source for Microsoft. So they delivered on all fronts, and the stock price reflects that today.
Jim, you own this name too, but you have a smaller position. Anything you hear make you want to get a little bigger there?
I liked everything I heard. I'm not going to rush into the name right now. I mean, this may be famous last words, but at this valuation, I think it's fairly valued. I look at that valuation difference between Google, roughly 20 times earnings, Microsoft, roughly 35 times earnings, and it's just not the name I want to put more money to work in. Google, as I already mentioned, is my largest position, so that's not, I'm not going to add there. I said a second ago that NVIDIA at the mid-30s, like, I'm comfortable with that. It's got a higher earnings growth rate than Microsoft. I'm not taking anything away from Microsoft. I'm not saying it's going down from here. I'm just saying it's not the name that I want to add incremental dollars to.
And Jim, you're also in this name, and it's all about the cloud for you, for Microsoft.
Yeah, it is about the cloud. It's about them being the market leader. They will be. Look, everybody that's astute and has the balance sheet is going to make money in this, right? But they, think about what they've got, their huge installed base, their huge recurring revenue, that deserves a premium. I understand where Jim's coming from. I don't necessarily disagree that it's fully valued here, but as a holder, I'm not selling any because they'll grow into the valuation and then some.
Exactly.
So the recurring revenue with the ability to raise price for new products, that's a whole nother growth, area for them in terms of step growth they've generated over the years. So I love it. It's phenomenal. You point out that their spending isn't all that much different than Meta's. Google's spending is not all that much different in AI than Meta. So
why Meta get creamed so much then?
Exactly, because there's PTSD there. Because in prior cycles they've spent way too much. Irrational spending. Now this is rational spending.
Okay.
So that's,
you mean like on the metaverse, things like that?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Got it. And Josh, you're not in Microsoft. Why not?
I have plenty of exposure to Microsoft. It's the largest company in the world. It's huge in the Qs. It's huge in the S&P 500. So it's not in Microsoft. It's not overweight relative to an overall market weight portfolio.
All right,
great,
fair enough.
Great companies, great stock. Nothing negative to say about it.
All right. Well, it was a big week this week, but also a really big week next week. We've got Amazon, for example, reporting next Tuesday. Got some ownership of that. Josh, you do own Amazon. What are your expectations there?
Look, this is the one for me. I think that this one's going to break out and build a brand new shareholder fan base. It's a situation where basically you had a CEO, you had a leadership change pretty much at the worst possible time. Bezos hands the company off to Jassy, who effectively built the cloud business and is probably one of the best operators anywhere, but the timing was just awful. So it was a really rough two-year period. I think they now have figured out what the street wants. They figured out what they want to do business-wise. They've taken their lumps in streaming. They've taken their lumps in a lot of different areas. But this is when I think you really want to be here. Amazon's last four operating income growth rates year over year. So this starts with Q1 2023, plus 28%, plus 132%, plus 343%, plus 267%. Please think about the size and the enormity of those numbers for operating income growth. You will not find that amongst any of the other companies we've just spent the past 19 minutes talking about. They're expecting 29% earnings growth next year. That's higher than any other Magnificent Seven stock. Even NVIDIA, which is only expected to have 21% earnings per share growth next year. So this is a premium business, not selling at a very high multiple relative to its own industry. Expectations are fairly low. The stock has rebounded, but has not been making new highs like Microsoft and NVIDIA have relative to the 21 days. And I think that this is the one. If they can continue on the stretch they've been on, the stock will get bid higher. And I remain long, and I want to see this thing through.
Amazon shares are higher by about 3%, potentially from what we've heard of the other cloud competitors, maybe some anticipation for what we'll hear. Before we run out of time here, I want to go to Apple, because that also reports next week on Thursday. Bren, Josh mentioned some low expectations for Amazon, potentially from some, and I imagine you might feel the same about Apple. It really hasn't done much compared to the other Magnificent Seven. What are you going to be looking for, or expectations from the quarter that it will report Thursday?
Yeah, well, I think where, you know, Microsoft, Google, and I agree, I think Amazon also is going to have a Microsoft, Google-type stock reaction next week. Apple will not. I don't think the stock is going to move that much out of the earnings. I really think that we as investors need to get a real sense of when is that refresh cycle going to really ramp up, where we just feel so compelled that we need to go trade in our iPhone 13 or 14 or 15, because they're all very high end to begin with. And I just don't think that's going to be this quarter. So I think as an investor, like, I sell calls, there's really not much option premium on Apple. So I really don't sell calls against it. I think you guys kind of sit, it's a little bit stuck in the mud. I think the S&P and the Qs will outperform it this year. But I do think Tim Cook and team, they will get their act together. They will delight the consumer. I mean, Apple's consumer rating, I think, is 100%. So they'll get there. I just don't think it's going to be this quarter.
It's definitely going to be one to watch, of course, along with a number of others next week. Well, coming up next, an energy drop and a pharma flop. A number of committee stocks making some big moves in today's session. The trades on ExxonMobil, AbbVie, and much more. Halftime, we'll be right back. Stick with us.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier, because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one, which means we do the little things right so that we can keep our promises and you can keep yours too. That's what drives us. To learn how OD can help your business keep its promises, visit odfl.com. Old Dominion, helping the world keep promises.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Halftime. Let's hit some committee stocks on the move, starting with Exxon, which is down today after the company posted an earnings miss for the first quarter. Jim, you own it. I imagine you're a little disappointed.
I'm not terribly disappointed. Look, we knew going into this that natural gas prices were incredibly low. And of course, they can always go lower, but they're pretty close to zero. So I do think that as the global economy continues to pick up, side note, there are signs of that, like there are real green shoots in Europe, that you'll see natural gas prices increase as well. And also, by the way, as you get through the presidential election, I don't want to go too tangential here, folks. Let me get to the main point. ExxonMobil is about 5%. 20% off of its all-time high. It can give a little back here. It's okay, all right? And the multiple here around 12 times, 3% dividend yield, buying back shares like crazy. Yeah, natural gas held things back this quarter, but that's likely to go higher, and crude oil prices are doing really well. I really don't see much going wrong here.
Okay, so you're hanging on to this one. Well, Pfizer on the move after the FDA approved its first gene therapy for a rare bleeding disorder. Pfizer reports on Wednesday, the stock hitting new 52-week lows in today's session. Josh, you're in this name.
I am. This is a beaten up value stock trading at 11-year lows, lost most of its market cap already. Very unpopular, very uncool. Nobody is talking about the company. Nobody wants to admit they own it. I totally get that. This is out of character for me, but I think there's too much value here to ignore. And I think the Seagen acquisition that they made last year is going to start paying off by the end of this year, and you're going to see attitudes change pretty quickly. So that's the bet I've made. I'm here. We'll see what happens.
All right, higher, but just marginally so on this FDA approval, about 0.7%. AbbVie falling despite the company topping earnings estimates. Jim, another one of yours.
I'm going to step back for a second. I really want Pfizer to work.
Okay.
I really want Josh to be encouraged as a value investor, and I fear this experience just is not doing it for him. So, Josh, I'm rooting for you, baby. On AbbVie,
it's early. Thank you, Jimmy.
I really mean it. On AbbVie, this was not a bad quarter. You know, look, this has recently been a source of funds, and it's had a pretty good 3-year run here. So I'm not that worried about this. First off, it beat on top and bottom lines. It raised guidance. Things that we talked about yesterday,
mm-hmm.
like Humira, how fast that will run off now that it's off patent. That's hanging in there really nicely. And some of their newer drugs like Skyrizi doing really well. Pretty attractive valuation, good dividend yield. Don't worry about the price drop. This was a good earnings report.
And BHP also under some pressure today. Miner Anglo-American rejecting BHP's takeover bid. That was pretty big news after the bell earlier this week. Brian, what's your reaction to this one?
Yeah, so BHP, really, they do copper and iron. And so the stock's been terrible this year. The price is down about 18%. This acquisition, I believe, is about them wanting to buy Anglo's copper and that they summarily rejected it because copper is hitting fresh 2-year highs. If you want to look at a pure copper play, look at FCX, Freeport-McMoRan, it's up 18%. And I think that as copper continues to be the key metal in the energy transition, we are going to continue to have these supply imbalances where we have too much demand and not enough supply. And so I think as it relates to BHP, it's in the penalty box right now, I think because of the iron. And if they want to go take a second bat at Anglo, they're going to have to do it much higher. This is on our watch list because we really want a more pure copper play. And I don't know how quickly China's going to recover. And that's what you need to get iron ore going meaningfully higher.
Well, a lot of angles to that story, Bryn. Let's get the headlines with Seema Modi. Seema.
Hi, Courtney. Here's a news update. Donald Trump's hush money trial continues with a defense team cross-examining former National Enquirer publisher David Pecker. Earlier today, Pecker testified that the National Enquirer was not going to pay for Stormy Daniels' story to then-editor-in-chief Dylan Howard and that former Trump attorney Michael Cohen, and said that the main concern was the harm that could have been done to the editor-in-chief's reputation. President Biden joining SiriusXM host Howard Stern this morning for a live interview. While it focused mainly on the president's life story, he did make some news for the first time, saying he would be happy to debate Donald Trump. The Trump campaign responded on social media saying, quote, okay, let's set it up. And social media influencer Andrew Tate, ordered today by a Romanian court to stand trial on charges of human trafficking, rape, and forming a criminal gang to sexually exploit women. His brother and two Romanian women also charged. They have denied the allegations. Tate's legal team says it will appeal the ruling. That's the news update. Halftime Report. We'll be back after this.
B2B selling is tougher than ever, and we feel your pain. If you're struggling to close deals, consider giving LinkedIn Sales Navigator a shot. This sales intelligence platform helps professionals like you engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also guides you in targeting the right buyers, highlights key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and uncovers hidden hot prospects so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/halftimereport.
That is linkedin.com/halftimereport for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/halftimereport and get started.
We're back on Halftime. Financials among the top performing sectors this year, though marginally lower here today. And that got us thinking, where are the biggest opportunities in the space right now? Let's get over to Dom Chu with this month's Sectornomics. Hi, Dom.
It's been a pretty good run in 2024 so far. In fact, entering today's trade, it was the third best performing sector in the S&P 500, financials, after just energy and communication services. So we'll see if that trend kind of plays out. Now, over the last year, you can see the sector is up 28% in banks. Those stocks are a big part of that story. So if you take a look at the relative valuation of some of these banks, we'll look at a measure of valuation for the banks called price to tangible book value, how much you pay in stock price for every bit of tangible or kind of holdable book value, if you will, in many of these stocks. If you take a look at some of those names, check out some of the bigger, more heavily valued ones. You can check out BNY Mellon, 2.5 times tangible book value. Morgan Stanley trades at about 2.3 times tangible book. JP Morgan Chase, considered by many to be the gold standard among these banks, 2.2 times tangible book, and Fifth Third Bank on the regional side, about 2.1 times. You contrast that to some of the lower valuations on a price to tangible book basis here. Look at Citigroup shares, which trade at a discount to their book value, just about 70 cents on the dollar for there. Citizens Financial, 1.2 times, Comerica, 1.4 times, and Goldman Sachs at 1.4 times as well. Now, tangible book value and the price to it, just one of the measures a lot of investors and traders look towards for valuation. But for right now, it seems as though there's an interesting development here with regard to a tale of two banks, if you will, happening with tangible book value. Courtney, I'll send things back over to you.
Thank you so much, Dom. Well, everyone on the committee actually has some financials ownership. Weiss, let's start with you. What do you like here? Why do you like it?
Oh, Goldman, number one, first and foremost. Look what stock's done. Stock's hit a new high. It's trading great. The palace intrigue about David Solomon has faded into distance justifiably because he's done a phenomenal job. I mean, you can't disassociate stock performance with the CEO, right? He's primarily responsible for it. And this is all without the equity markets being really open for IPOs. This is without M&A resuming the record uphill in penetration because of more and more deals as companies are flush with cash in their balance sheets. So when rates come down, that's when you start to see it really explode. So if this is the appetizer in terms of the performance of stock, I'm ready for the main course. And I can tell you, you know, as somebody who does business with Goldman, they stand alone on the street. And competitors that I talk to, competitors of Goldman, also say it. I get covered better by Goldman than any other firm. And we will have equal balances at other firms. It's just amazing that others haven't caught on to it.
Jim, you got a number of financial holdings.
And I would define them all as big.
Okay.
So you're talking Citigroup, you're talking JP Morgan, BlackRock. I agree about the strength of Goldman Sachs. We can put Morgan Stanley in there. But the overarching comment I'm making here is that in the financials, I want to be in the big banks. I don't want to be in the regionals. We all know the problems that they're facing. I'm not going to add on to that. I just don't find the risk-reward potential there appetizing to me, whereas I look at the big banks and I see those multiples that Dom was just talking about, and also including low earnings multiples. I see loan growth. I see capital markets starting to pick up. You did make a mention that IPOs have been slow.
Right.
They're starting to pick up.
Yep.
And in the meantime, as you know, Steve, the fixed income issuance market has been very strong all year. So there's just loan growth. Net interest income we know has been, you know, it's been held back by what's going on with the Fed. That will eventually be cured, eventually. So there's just a lot to like in the larger segment of the financials.
Yeah, I guess I'd say the high margin businesses like IPOs and like mergers and acquisitions. We've only seen a hint of it like Rubik. They just haven't kicked in. The pipelines are full, not just the Goldman, but everywhere. But that's the high margin business that will really drive earnings and revenues.
Josh, you own JP Morgan just like Jim. It's one of the stocks you love. You hold it fondly.
Yeah, I've been in this stock forever. There's nothing new to say here. I actually want to pitch a much smaller financial.
Oh, okay.
It's a software company that's hiding amongst the financials. The company is called Toast. T-O-S-T is the ticker.
Sure.
So this is in the financials, but it's not in the S&P financials because the market cap is only $12 billion. They're going to report, I think, the second week of May. It'll be a profitable quarter. They just started reporting profitable quarters in the middle of last year. And I really think that from a like when you're thinking about financials, and you ask yourself, where is like the real opportunity? It's going to businesses that have not digitized and have not gotten sophisticated about payments and payroll and all of these really mundane things, but that become really important. And that's what Toast has done. They now have 100,000 restaurants on the platform, and pretty much every month they're announcing a new major enterprise deal, sometimes with a hotel chain that has tons of restaurants, et cetera. So this is my financial idea that I'm the most excited about. It'll definitely be volatile, but from my perspective, you talk about a TAM. It's $126 billion in gross value on their platform last year. That number should go higher as they keep signing restaurants. So I like TOST.
It looks like this REIT's listening to you, Josh. It looks like we're getting a little pop here on your comments, up about 2% on shares of Toast. Well, coming up next, this week's standout stocks, four big moves from four committee names. We'll break down those trades coming up next. Welcome back. We're checking the investment committee's portfolios and highlighting some of the big winners this week. Weiss Vertiv, you'll have fun saying this one, up double digits this week on a strong earnings report. What do you make of what's going on with the action?
Vertiv, and I've worked my fingers to the bone trying to get Josh to buy it all the way up, but unrequited love. Look, I bought this in November. It's more than doubled. And the reason I bought it is I was looking for a way to play data centers and AI in terms of the tool belt rather than going to this, into the others that are directly there. And this is it. Hmm. It's got, you know, it's got scarcity value in terms of what they do as a company standing alone, which is the cooling racks and other, you know, tools or equipment that's required for data centers. So, you know, particularly data centers using GPUs, which are the advanced AI chips, is they run hot. And data centers now three stories tall for AI versus being one story tall. So you need a lot more of them. And they're the ones that make them. You can't let the equipment run hot. So that's why I bought it. I don't think it's cheap. I've been saying that, you know, for a while, but I also don't think I'm going to sell it for a while because it's going to keep going. And that scarcity value and the sector they're in gives it a premium valuation.
Up 25% in a week. That's a pretty impressive move.
Good earnings. Good earnings.
Jim, NXP on pace for its best week in 3 years. It's reporting its earnings on Monday. Can it keep up the momentum?
I think it can, Courtney. You know, this is one of those semiconductor companies we don't talk about too much. We talk a lot about NVIDIA, AMD, Broadcom. This is a semiconductor company that is highly focused on the automotive industry. It's relatively attractively priced. Now, here's the plus and the minus of it. We know that automobile production is actually cranking right now. Problem is, it's for a lot of internal combustion engine vehicles as opposed to electric vehicles. The electric vehicles have more chip exposure. So how that balances out, I think we're going to find that the shares are too cheap even for that EV pullback that we've seen. Again, very attractively priced. It's been a winner in the 4 years that I've owned it. It's done much better than the S&P 500 overall. Of course, not as well as some of the AI chip companies, but I do think there's more room to run here.
Okay. Bryn Palantir on pace to break a four-week losing streak.
Yeah, I mean, Palantir was an AI company before AI was cool. This is without a doubt. I think there's no other software company that has the scale of the military contracts. And I think it's a misunderstood company because that's what most people think it still does. They continue to get big awards from US and US friendly countries. But really what I'm excited and why I bought the stock is what they're doing on the commercial side. They've been doing these within their AI platform, these AI boot camps. Last quarter, that was up 70% year over year. Their commercial revenue, just plain and simple, was up 30%. The stock made 3 cents, the earnings 3 cents last quarter. I think this is early days for them. They're hiring a sales team to really go after the commercial traffic. I think that they're so trusted. Their earnings come out at about 9 or 10 days. I think this is one to watch. That has a lot more upside.
Shares are up 3% here today. Josh, you got a big one. Matterport soaring nearly 200% this week on deal news with CoStar to buy it for $1.6 billion. Congratulations on this move.
Yeah, Courtney, this is the worst investment I've made in the last 10 years. I'm down if let's say I hold it until the deal closes.
Okay.
I get $5.50 mixed between cash and stock in CoStar. My average cost is $10.63. I'm looking at my lots now. I'm down in all of them except for one. My highest print was $19.94. So this is a 50% loss for me, even if I hold it till the deal closes. The good news is I think they did the right thing for the company. Congratulations to RJ on finding a solution, because this was not going to make it as a standalone stock. I bought it in 2021. The world has changed. I shouldn't have held it. I did. But it's probably the best resolution they could have found. So don't congratulate me. I want to wear a bag over my head just talking about it.
All right. Well, good for them. But, yeah, I see what you're saying, because the stock's sitting at 474 right now. That's all right. You win some, you lose some.
Wah, wah.
Straight ahead, bracing for the busiest week of earnings season. With more than a third of the S&P 500 set to report, the committee breaks down the key names to watch coming up next. Welcome back. We are about to kick off the busiest week of earnings season. Nearly a third of all the S&P and 20% of the Dow will be reporting. So let's get set up on some of the key energy names. Let's start with Transocean. This is Monday after the bell. Jim, you own this one.
Yeah, this is probably the most volatile name in the energy space. Mm-hmm. I only own this personally, not for clients, because it just moves around too much. But things have been going well in the operations of this company. They recently announced a new contract for one of their rigs at a $500,000 per day day rate, which is very, very high. What we're looking for next is some indication that their 11 cold stacked idle rigs are going to be put back on the market. Now, I will admit, Courtney, I've been waiting for this, kind of like Linus from the Peanuts cartoon waits for the great pumpkin. Folks, if you get that reference, you're my kind of person.
Or 6 years old.
Or 60 years old.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But actually, you know, what we're hoping for on this conference call is that we get some indication that that might be coming soon.
Okay, fair enough. And then we got Diamondback Energy. This one is Tuesday after the bell. Bryn, this is one of yours.
Yes, and I definitely get the Linus Charlie Brown reference. And so the estimates are for revenues and earnings up 9 and 8%. But listen, this stock, if you took the name off, you'd think it was a tech stock. It's been a beast. It's up 32% year to date. They have like best in class management that has excellent execution. They have capital discipline. They're raising their dividends and distribution, free cash flow, strong balance sheet. So I think when people are afraid of buying energy names, this is just like the poster child of a company that continues to execute. I don't think there'll be surprises in the earnings, but it is up 32% already year to date. So maybe it takes a breather.
Yeah, that is a good chart. Like you said, if you take the name off, it looks like a tech chart. The uptrend is just fairly positive and to the right. Well, final trades, it's already almost time. Coming up on Halftime, we'll be right back. Welcome back. Real quickly, Weiss, you sold out of your Bitcoin position. Why?
I'm a firm non-believer. No business use cases.
Why'd you have
to? It's an asset class, so I understand that.
Okay.
But I bought it because of expectation of ETFs and then a bet on the marketing power of BlackRock and Fidelity. And then the halving, which I didn't really count on, even though it was advertised. And I got those catalysts. And so now, if I want to own it going further, I've got to believe in the use cases. I've got to believe there's a lot more interest in it. And I don't. So I bought it under $30,000, and it's been a great trade.
Okay, well, good job. Congratulations on that. Before we get to the final trades, though, a big shout-out to our own Josh Brown. His firm, Ritholtz Wealth Management, was just named the number 8 investment advisory firm in America by USA Today. Congratulations. Ritholtz also announcing it's opening a new office in Manhattan Beach, California. So congrats all around Josh Brown and the team. That's a well worth a shout-out. Let's get to our final trade. So, Josh, go ahead and kick us off.
I'll just reiterate, I think the Netflix selling was overdone. I am now in the name.
Bryn.
Yeah, the NASDAQ, the Qs have been stuck in a range bound. I like JEPQ, which owns the NASDAQ. The QQQ sells covered calls, has got almost a 10% yield, plus you get capital appreciation.
Okay, and Weiss, what do you got?
Look, the Department of Defense is 10 to 15 years behind in technology, and they're all their initiatives now, whether it's JADC2 or Zero Trust, are geared on technology. The one that benefits from that, as well as speculation of an increased budget in defense, Leidos. Phenomenal company. New management came in not that long ago. They're in the sweet spot of everything defense. You know, all they need now is to get into an ERM program.
Got it. Well, happy Friday, everybody. That does it for Halftime.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
Jake from State Farm here, hanging out with Mel's Mow & Grow. Mel chose State Farm for small business insurance because his local agent is a small business owner too, so she knew how to help him personalize his policies. And now, he's rolling in the green. Like a good neighbor, guys, I'm trying to do the line.
Oh, sorry, Jake.
It's all good. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.